Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is
What
Rich.
Is going
Hello,
on,
Rich.
Jason?
You know, I'm good, but I'm not quite as good as I was last
year. That's all right. You know, you were on a different podcast last year. We brought you over to the Over and Back podcast this year, and it's been fine, I guess. But, you know, the season's ramping up again, and it might be time for you to explore some other options. I'm just saying, you know. Or you could let me go, too. You can just keep this if you want. Like, but
okay. Fair enough. I mean, the only one of us, this podcast is only big enough for one of us.
Clearly, yes. Yeah, it's
that's a thing. Yeah,
the Over and Back podcast explodes here on cue the saxophone music. And
right.
That's us being nerds. Okay, that's us being wrestling nerds. All right, we'll move on.
Yeah. Do I get to keep over, or do you get to keep over and I take back?
I was going
to
take back anyway. So if you want over, I think over's good. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll take over.
Because then you got, like, then the podcast has to be all about the future, and that seems kind of like difficult. You're like, well, next year, the Raptors will be, well, mine, I can still look at the back. You know, it's a little bit easier to, you know, the back podcast is a little, the over. Well, you know, you could parlay it pretty easily into a betting podcast as well, because I know you're nothing if not the world's foremost sport betting expert. So yeah, that would,
Yes, yeah. Our advertisements for such obviously
right, of course, yes,
gamblers we are.
The company that shall not be named. Yeah, that's
sure.
Yeah,
that
no, yeah,
again.
Yeah.
So,
pay. I'll gladly mention them.
Exactly.
All the time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, we are talking about some situations. 1 year blunders. We are talking about that as of players who ended up, you know, with some ballyhoo going into a situation where expectations were high. They were perhaps could be in situations where they could win championships or at least have great acclaim. But unfortunately, things did not go well. Some of it was personality or fit driven. Some of it was just injuries or guys getting old, and some of it is where the circumstances just rapidly change. So we're going to we picked six interesting examples of this phenomenon throughout NBA history. I'm sure there are other good choices as well. We're going to maybe briefly discuss a few at the end of the show. But yeah, there's two that come to mind that are kind of going on right now where it definitely seems like the potential is there for this to be happening again. One is Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. There's been talk over the past few weeks of trade demands and not getting along with some of the young stars there. And of course, that was him being traded to the Timberwolves was quite a big phenomenon. He was expected to do great things, and he did lead them to a playoff appearance and certainly great improvement on the court. But there is always been something kind of amiss in the last year, and it's finally kind of come out. We'll see if that lasts. The other one, of course, being Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. You know, they traded for a disaffected guy, taking a chance that he'll be able to bring them to great things in the East without LeBron. But obviously, some big chance there for disaster potential.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the idea that both these guys have been kind of linked to other teams as well, that you know, a guy like a Kawhi, like, yeah, he might do great in Toronto this year, but like if he just leaves and Toronto doesn't obviously get to the highest of highs and he's just then, you know, a Clipper or a Laker next year or whatever, then that would be, you know, one that we'd sort of consider a potential blunder in that sense. And I think one thing that was important about this when we're going through is we try to pick guys that were in their prime, near their prime, high expectations, because we had a lot of great examples of people who said, like, I know there was one guy in our Facebook group that said, like, George Gervin with the Bulls, and that's a great one, like George Gervin with the Bulls, but he was kind of done at that point, you know what I mean? George Gervin, like, yeah, it was like George Gervin on the Bulls and George Gervin's George Gervin, but it was kind of done, you know what I mean? And like Paul Pierce on the Nets was one that got brought up, or I think I don't know if he just played 1 year with the Nets, I don't recall if he played a few, but like at that point Paul Pierce is kind of toast, you know, like there was quite a few that we got, like Isaiah Thomas last year with the Cavs. People brought that one up. I didn't really feel comfortable about that one either, just because Isaiah Thomas, I think, was a little bit of broken parts at that time. So we try to find guys that either, you know, were in their primes, were still having great careers, or there were high expectations, because there is one we're going to talk about where it's pretty obvious that the guy had kind of slowed down a lot, but the expectations were super high coming into it. So that's kind of how we judged it. Or you know, some people brought up like Dwayne Wade on the Bulls last year, and it's like, well, no, Dwayne Wade's kind of, you know, what we thought, or Dwayne Wade on the Bulls a few years ago, kind of what we thought at that point, where he's kind of breaking down and falling. So we try to keep it to just guys sort of in their prime or at the top of their career.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And, yeah, and you know, I think the most recent example for that is Carmelo Anthony in Oklahoma City, and this obviously just last year. You remember it on September 2017, he was traded to the Thunder from the Knicks in exchange for Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and a 2018 second round pick. And The quotes after the season sort of show that, yeah, maybe this wasn't going to go well from the beginning. You know, you and I did a podcast even, you know, looking at this, going into it, kind of comparing it to some other, you know, big three-like situations. We had questions about the fit, but thought, you know, with the talent there, maybe Carmelo could kind of slide into a role where, you know, he could be more like Olympic Melo. It's kind of the talking point there of being able to, you know, be more of a spot-up shooter, be less ball-dominant. There was some of that going on, but it didn't really obviously work out in it. And the quote, he said, it wasn't a good fit. Everything was just so rushed, going from the team for media day and the day before training camp. These guys already had something in place, and then I come along in the 25th hour like, oh shit, Melo, just come on and join us. Like, you can figure it out since you've been around the game for a long time. That's why it was so inconsistent. At times, I had to figure it out on my own rather than somebody over there or people over there helping me.
Yeah, so not yeah. great. Not a great start. I mean, those came out, of course, after the season. But we'll discuss some quotes that happened during the season. But it was a lot of, you know, catch 22 stuff. Oh yeah, afterwards. But yeah, and again, like September 25th, 2017 is when he comes to the team. I mean, that is pretty late in the process. Things are going on. Guys have already kind of got familiar with each other, and he comes in. They had already acquired Paul George at this point, and then Anthony was, as you said, like that second, that third piece of this quote big three or whatever that was going to fit with all these other guys who had really largely been together for quite a while, with the exception of Paul George. But yeah, it didn't, obviously did not work out great from the beginning, and seemed like it was kind of doomed from the start.
Yeah, for sure. So we decided we would just pick five memorable quotes and memorable in quotes games rather than, you know, recapping this event that, of course, just happened fairly recently. So first one we picked was December 16th, 2017. His first game back against the Knicks, first game back in New York, is a fact. Carmelo had the rare exact zero game score against his former team. 12 points on 5 of 18 shooting and had 5 personal fouls for good measure. Michael Beasley, his quote after the game, after a Knicks win, you got to beat the best to be the best. He's one of the best of our era, which, you know, I guess is true. It's kind of a, you know, to be the man, you got to beat the man kind of quote from
it is,
Michael
yeah.
Beasley there. So, yeah.
He's
yeah.
not, like, totally wrong. Like, yeah, he is the one of the yeah. best of the era, but, like, I don't, it doesn't, like, just happen forever, you know what I mean? Like, you can't beat, like, right. you know, it's like, you know, yeah, at a certain point, like, beating Carmelo no longer means the same thing that it meant 10 years ago, you know? That's sure. kind of one of the issues there. Like, yeah,
yeah.
You know, if you beat Dwayne Wade in the Heat, it's not like, oh, that's a world champion right there. You beat him, you've shown. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, kind of. Yes, Dwayne Wade is good, and he is accomplished, but, like, yeah, it's 2018. Like, this isn't the same Dwayne Wade, so, but I don't know. Yeah, it's Beasley, so it is what it is.
Sure. Yeah, well, you know, with Melo, the thing is, like, how close was he at his best to being, like, the best player in the league? Like, he maybe was a top five player at a certain point? I'm, like, not even 100% sure.
Right, I've always been yeah. kind of down overall on Carmelo, so I'm probably a bad judge of it, because I think there are probably people that would say that. I don't think anybody would ever say at any point he was the best, you know what I mean? Like, because he played, obviously, alongside LeBron,
right.
and
right.
it's pretty much impossible to make an argument that at any point he was better than LeBron, but I think there are people that would probably put him very comfortably top five, and maybe a few of those years. I know there was obviously the one Knicks year where he really put everything together, and the team was actually pretty good as well, that people might put him, you know, even in that upper echelon top three or whatever. To me, I think, yeah, there were probably some years where he was top five. I feel like he did get kind of passed up. Maybe, I don't know, the exact timeline is tough, but I mean, those first few years in Denver, I think he was kind of growing and becoming one of those top five guys, and I think even the last few years in Denver, he was there. Then Knicks, he popped up a little bit here and there, but yeah, for me, I've always been kind of so on his game, so I don't know that I would ever put him, like, unequivocally top five or whatever, but I think there's probably some years where he absolutely was.
Yeah, I definitely, like, yeah, you could definitely make a case, like, he was, there are years where he was maybe one of the top five guys. But yeah, it clearly was never, there was never ever a conversation that was anywhere reasonable, like, oh yeah, Carmelo Anthony is the best player in the league, you know. That was never, like, a legitimate thing. So, if Beasley were saying that about LeBron, yeah, that would make a little bit of sense. Carmelo, it's just, I guess, more just being nice, you know.
Sure, right.
It's not Ric Flair, it's more like Jeff Jarrett, you know.
Ronnie Garvin. Yeah, no.
Yeah, Ronnie Garvin. Yeah,
it's not Ronnie Garvin.
Hey, Garvin, stop. It's a heck of a move. So, next we have March 10th, 2018 against the Spurs. Carmelo only had 2 points on 1 of 7 shooting, 32 minutes. Thunder did win this game, but it was a historically bad game for Anthony standards. Only 3 times in his career before this he had been held less than 5 points despite playing 30 or more minutes. So,
yeah. Not great.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that was kind of tough is in, you know, in doing the research for this, I was expecting a lot of like real dud Anthony games. Like, all right. Like, because I remember in real time watching it, it was like, wow, this guy really, like, there was games where you'd watch and you're like, Carmelo, what are you doing, buddy? Like, you're just shooting them out of this game or whatever. And when you go back and look at the stats, it's not like overwhelmingly terrible. You know what I mean? There are a few games. Those two really stood out as really terrible games. And there were some games, again, where he was, you know, 5 of 20 shooting, but that's kind of the Carmelo experience sometimes. Like, even when he was good, you'd sometimes get 5 of 22 Carmelo games or whatever. He'd still get like 18 points or whatever because he'd get a few at the foul line. And he would, you know, obviously never be that great a defender, but I think what surprised me is there wasn't any like, you look at the stats and they're not great. They're not like wonderful, but they're not like historically terrible. Like, he wasn't an absolute disaster in Oklahoma City. It just didn't work. It just didn't meet the expectations that a lot of people had. And that's kind of why we put it on this list more than anything. It wasn't a complete disaster of a season where, oh my God, can you believe Carmelo Anthony was so bad? And here's all the bad games he had. It just didn't work. You know what I mean? It was just never kind of clicked with him there. And he's the first to admit it as well.
Sure. Yeah. Just for reference sake, he averaged 16.2 points per game, which is down from 22.4. True shooting percentage, he was down as well from 53% to just over 50%. And box score plus minus, he was previous year, he was negative 0.7. And last year, 2018, he was negative 3.8. So those are not great indicators.
No. I mean, yeah, he wasn't good. Like, no doubt, he was not good. It's just like, you know, statistically, especially the counting stats, Mel's right. going to get his stuff. You know what I mean? Like, Mel's sure. probably going to score 10 points no matter what. Like, it's very hard for him to not. And that's why that game where he only scores 2 really stands out, because he plays that many minutes. He only shoots 7 times, which is rare for him. But that kind of became a theme as the year went on. Like, that March game was one of many where Melo just completely got lost in the offense. But the first few months of the year, he was getting all of his shots that he would normally get. They just weren't going in very much. But he was still, you know, finding a way to 15 or 18 points almost every game or whatnot. But yeah, it was definitely not a good year at all, for sure. Yeah.
His assist percentage went from 14.5 to 6.5.
Which, yeah, that's not ideal. I think there was one point, and I tried to see if it held through the entire season, but I remember there was some point where he had like some ungodly high usage percentage with an ungodly low assist percentage. It was like far and away the worst ever in that stat that year. But I think something happened towards the end of the year where he did not actually meet that mark or whatever. So congratulations, I guess. Mm-hmm.
So some of the interesting Carmelo Anthony quotes early on in the year when the team was struggling a bit. They got off to kind of a rough start before, you know, ending up with a pretty good record. Nobody's moping around. Nobody's frustrated. I think guys are angry. I think guys are pissed. That just comes from your competitive nature and wanting to win games. We're fine, man. It's on us to figure out how to be consistent. That's our biggest downfall. We're not a consistent team, which is obviously a boring thing to say. Also, later on... this was after the season when, during his exit interview, he said, "I'm not sacrificing no bench role. I think everyone knows I've sacrificed damn near everything. I was willing to sacrifice nearly everything for the situation to work out." And it's interesting because, like, I can kind of see where he's coming from, because the bench thing is, you know, I guess that's a huge pride thing. And it's like, I would get sick of everybody asking me that question, because I'm not sure, like, him going on the bench actually is necessarily like a good answer to that situation, because like, I think he can be more theoretically be more valuable with the starters with the shooting rather than, you know, being like, even if he's going against second units, I'm not sure you want like, you know, him feeding him the ball and him like, you know, taking on that much of a load on offense at that point. But yes, that I can, nevertheless, it was not a great indicator for him.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the same things are kind of going on right now in Houston, where he comes to Houston and immediately the first question is, hey, are you going to go to the bench? And I get it. Like, I think there's this idea, and a lot of times there are players in NBA history where people bring them up, like, you know, that this guy would be so much better if he just came off the bench because he can just do everything he wants to do. Like, but that idea is kind of dumb, because it's not like you said, they don't want to just like, all right, well, it's time for the bench to come in, so everybody just pass to Carmelo and stand around and watch him. Like, that's, you don't really want that either. Like, that's not a solution. That's just, you know, hiding the problem and putting it in, you know, the last half of the first quarter and the, you know, middle of the second quarter. Like, that's not really a solution, though, to just say, hey, Melo, just grab the ball every time you're in, just shoot every single time you want, because we don't care, because it's our second unit. Like, no, you want to also have the second unit play similar to how the first. So yeah, there's some fallacies in there where it's just the idea that, hey, Carmelo can just do whatever he wants in the second unit and that'll be great. Like, yeah, I don't know that necessarily works out, you know, exactly how people maybe envision it in their heads.
Sure. And then I think what really sums it up is the thank you letter that he sent to Oklahoma City fans after officially signing with the Rockets. Some quotes there. He wanted nothing more than to make it work. he said, I know it was only one season, but from the time I arrived in OKC, I was greeted with so much love. And then in life, I've learned that things don't always turn out how you want, which I think if you have to say those things in a goodbye, thank you letter, it's an indication like, you know, maybe that's, you know, all those things are nice in and of themselves. But if you have to put the your goodbye letter, then, you know, maybe it's indication, maybe not the best fit.
No, for sure not. And the problem is, I think we might. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe having a similar conversation next year around the same time about the old Houston Rockets. Experience. We'll see.
Right, we'll see. I think the fact that Houston probably has a smarter offense overall, though they have obviously a lot of ball dominance with Harden and Paul and getting that to fit, plus the coaching history between Anthony and Mike D'Antoni and other reasons, I'm not super optimistic, but I think that maybe there's just a better shot of the fit working out a little bit better, maybe them finding ways to succeed in the offense that Oklahoma City wasn't able to find.
Right, and I think there's a better basketball culture around Houston as well with those guys. So yeah, I tend to think it probably will work better, and maybe this was a season where Carmelo had, the season in Oklahoma City, had kind of a wake-up call and understood, okay, here's some things I have to change about my game and whatnot. We'll see. Yeah, we might have the same conversation, you know, at the same time next year, or we might say, oh, wow, that OKC year was really the aberration, and otherwise he's kind of, thank God he was able to kind of transform his career, because I don't want Carmelo to be like out of the league. Like, I would love for Carmelo to like hang around for another 5-6 years or whatever and kind of alter his game and be similar to Vince Carter types and those sort of guys that we're seeing right now. Like, I love the idea of like guys that I watched growing up or whatever, like hanging around with, you know, in the second chapters of their career, you know, altering their games a little bit. Jason Terry likes, you know, Vince Carter, like, you know, those sort of guys that I really enjoy. Dirk this year is, of course, going to be doing that a little bit more as well. Like, I love that idea of guys sort of reinventing themselves and changing themselves as they go on. So I hope he's one of those that does it.
Yeah, and I've always kind of enjoyed watching Carmelo, even despite sometimes, hanging on the ball and all the jab steps and stuff. For whatever reason, Carmelo's always been a kind of a guy who I've enjoyed watching, even if I'm, like you, skeptical of how, you know, great of a player he's actually been. A very good one, but, you know, not really, you know, top three for very often, as we talked about.
I'm kind of upset that he didn't hang with the Atlanta Hawks. He was on the Atlanta Hawks for like an hour and a half, unfortunately.
Yes. So obviously, as a Hawks fan, I'm disappointed. We could not recreate, you know, 2004, 2005 with Anthony being, you know, a slightly older, but probably better shape than Anton Walker, you know, going on things. So
I would hope so. I would certainly hope he's in better shape than Anton Walker that year, but I guess you don't know.
Yeah, right. There you go.
All right, we'll move on to our next one here. This is an infamous one here. Dwight Howard in Los Angeles, of course, with the Lakers. Before we do this, though, again, I feel like we have to kind of do this a lot, and I feel like every single offseason we have to do this. But Dwight Howard was very, very good, like really good for a lot of years. He's a surefire Hall of Famer, so let's stop having even a minute of a debate about that. So this is everything that he did before this trip to L.A., and he's had, you know, some decent runs since this L.A. year, and this L.A. year wasn't all bad. We'll talk about the bad here in a bit, but it wasn't all bad. But before that season, 6 straight All-Star games, he had led the league in rebounds 4 years, blocks twice, and his accumulated win shares, they were 87.5 at this point. 87.5 win shares for Dwight at this time. That's just Orlando Dwight. Would have put him top 20 all-time among centers. Already, if he retired, after he didn't even go to LA, he just said, you know what, I'm just going to eat Skittles all day. I'm done with the basketball. This is stupid. He'd be top 20 all-time in centers. Right now, he's 9th. He's squeezed between Walt Bellamy and Bob Lanier. So, like, Dwight Howard, good. You know, like, he's an idiot. He's a weirdo, and nobody likes his jokes. But he's good, and he's very good, and he's an all-time great. So, sorry. Like, I know it sucks because he's a dweeb, but he's an all-time great player.
Yeah, nobody likes my jokes either, so.
Yeah, exactly, right. Like, yeah, I make fart jokes, exactly. Nobody laughs either, so it's like, sure. You know. Yeah, I also eat way too much candy, and, you know, that's, so I in some ways, I empathize with Dwight Howard, and him and I are very similar on the basketball court, too. I am also
You're a locker room cancer, so, you know, it's true. I understand.
We talked about it earlier. We already want to break this whole thing up.
Yeah, that's why we're splitting up, unfortunately. Yeah, it's sad. Yeah.
But
together.
Things had obviously gone south in Orlando after the trip to the finals in 2009. Howard and head coach Stan Van Gundy had butted heads, famously very, very the most awkward moment possibly in NBA history, where Stan Van Gundy's talking shit about Dwight Howard while sipping on a Diet Coke, I think it was. I forget what he was drinking. And then Dwight just like walks in. And he's like, oh, hey, Dwight, what's up? I'm like, hey, how's it going? And, like, they just laugh. And every reporter's just like, oh, no. Like, what do we do? How do we get out of here? But anyway, he had many times been requesting a trade from the team. He had ready to move on. During the 2012 offseason, Howard had an uneven season that year. He missed a huge chunk of games due to back injuries. He requested the Magic trade him at the end during that offseason. He wanted to go to the Nets. The Nets had just at this season relocated to Brooklyn. He really, really wanted to go to Brooklyn. He really wanted to be a Nets. Who doesn't want to be a Brooklyn Net, to be honest? I mean, especially now that you look at it now. I mean, people are just clamoring to be Brooklyn Nets. He intended to become a free agent at the end of the season because he still had 1 year on his contract. So at the end of the 2013 season, he was going to be a free agent. And he basically said that, you know, he was just going to leave. He was not going to re-sign with Orlando, so they might as well just trade him right now. Orlando traded him. Not to the Brooklyn Nets, but to the Los Angeles Lakers. This is a team, the Lakers team at this point, flush with talent. They had Kobe Bryant, Paul Gasol, Meta World Peace, Steve Nash, and now Dwight Howard. So that's a hell of a lineup right there. People forget, I think, about this trade as well. This was a nuts trade, too. There was a ton of players that moved, a bunch of different teams. The deal also involved the Philadelphia 76ers and the Denver Nuggets. Some of these had big ramifications as well. The Lakers got Chris Duhon and Earl Clark. The Magic got Josh McRoberts, Christian Ayanga. Remember Christian Ayanga? You probably don't.
Slightly, but yes.
I remember Christian Ayanga.
I remember the name.
Maurice Harkless, Mo Harkless, Nikola Vucevic, Aaron Aflalo, Al Harrington, and draft picks. So the Magic got quite a lot from that. Philadelphia received Jason Richardson and the corpse of Andrew Bynum, and Denver received Andre Iguodala. So it worked pretty well for Denver.
People didn't know it was the corpse of Andrew Bynum yet, though. People still thought he was going
to
be
good. Oh, that's true. He was still a human being at that point. Yeah, he still was actually part human, so as opposed to a pile of bones. So that's good to know. So expectations were obviously high because I said that's Kobe, Paul Gasol, Meta World Peace, Steve Nash, and now Howard. I mean, that's obviously a team that had just won a title a few years ago. They're adding Steve Nash, one of the best point guards in the league, even though he had gotten older, but he still had some, you know, what felt like something left in him. And then Dwight Howard, who we just mentioned his credentials right there. I mean, they were going to be good. Donnie Walsh, who had just recently re-upped with the Pacers to become their president, said, I think they will be good. So he kept it nice and short. Kobe Bryant on Facebook posted immediately after the trade, well, it looks like Superman has found a home. The Lakers have landed a piece that will hopefully carry the franchise long after I'm gone. I've spoken to Dwight Howard, and we are locked and loaded to hopefully bring back the title. So expectations were sky high. Things were pretty untenable, even at the time, even at the beginning. Dwight Howard's quote immediately following the trade, I found this pretty interesting. I don't remember this happening at the time. He says, right now, it's about today. And today is the day that I'm here with the Lakers. And that's the only thing that matters. Whatever happens a year from now, we'll wait until that time. But right now, it's all about me starting fresh. I don't like that. You know what I mean? If I just acquire you and you're like, well, today is today and I'm with the Lakers, we'll see about later. But that's probably an untenable quote from the beginning and maybe peeked into a little bit of what was going on. And obviously with Kobe Bryant being Kobe and Dwight having the temperament that he had, it seemed like it might have been an issue, but it felt like Kobe was so good at that point and Dwight was so good and Steve Nash was so good that they were going to make this work no matter what, even with Gasol. And Meta World Peace, they had the infamous Sports Illustrated cover, the Now This Is Going to Be Fun, showing Howard and Nash in their new Lakers uniforms. Spoiler alert, it was not fun. It was not fun at all.
No.
After it,
not so fun.
They lost their first 8 games in preseason, and they started 1-4 in the regular season. Head coach Mike Brown was fired. Bernie Bickerstaff assumed interim duties, and then former Phoenix Suns coach Mike D'Antoni was brought in to be the full-time coach. I mean, hey, he worked with Nash. It's Mike D'Antoni. This will be great. It didn't really go that much better. They began the season 15-21. This is their worst start since 1994, so that's quite a while there. January 24, 2013, Los Angeles Times, Bill Plaschke. His headline is, Dwight Howard is at the center of the Lakers' issue. And this is kind of a little excerpt from that. He says, one night he's going 31-16. The next night he's taking 5 shots in 30 minutes. Some nights he fills the lane and alters every shot. Other nights you can watch an entire half without knowing he's there. He entertains the media before games in the locker room, but his teammates wonder about the seriousness of his preparation. He often plays with a childlike joy, but he plays on a team whose 5-ring leader has angrily instructed them to put on their big boy pants. If there has been a flame extinguished, it happened in a Memphis locker room this week when Bryant challenged his heir by wondering if Howard found it difficult to play with him. Howard reportedly did not stand up to Bryant and seemed despondent afterwards, and that's no sign of a future Lakers leader. So Kobe's not happy, Dwight's not happy, the Lakers are bad, things aren't going well here. This is not going well in LA at all.
Yeah, no, definitely not going well. And yeah, the expectations were so high to begin with. I mean, there were people who were talking about them like maybe competing to win 70 games and, you know, being up there with Miami in terms of, you know, being one of the great teams in the league. So, yeah, I think people, the underestimating, you know, the first of all, the chemistry issues, second of all, the, you know, the serious back issues that that Howard had, and if, you know, what happened with Steve Nash as well, basically missing most of the season, you know, all that stuff just piled on and was pretty, you know, added up to, you know, what ended up being, you know, a fairly disastrous year considering expectations.
Absolutely. And yeah, the Nash, we should note that, yeah, Nash had a ton of injuries as well, back issues as well. So he missed a majority of the season. It was pretty much a non-factor. And a lot of the Lakers seemed to get old really quick. Like, Meta World Peace was kind of on his last leg and getting pretty old. And even Kobe was starting to show some signs of you know, kind of slowing down a little bit. But regardless, throughout the season, Howard, he was upset he was not getting the ball enough. And he felt that Kobe Bryant was shooting too much. That is probably likely, both of those things. One night, Howard said he needed to bring it and dominate in more ways than just scoring. The next day, he had 2 points and four rebounds in just 14 minutes. Then he sat out the rest of the game after aggravating his shoulder injury. January 30th, Howard left the Phoenix Suns game early after re-aggravating his shoulder, which has been a problem all year. So he had back and shoulder issues all year. Brian, after the game, says that Howard worries too much, quote, that's a quote, worries too much, and, quote, doesn't want to let anybody down. And he urged him to play through the pain when Pau Gasol was sidelined with a torn plantar fascia. So they didn't have Pau Gasol because he had injuries, and Kobe essentially saying, suck it up, man, and get out there and let's play. Howard returned the next game after commenting that Brian was, quote, not a doctor, and I'm not a doctor. That's his opinion. So, yes, things are not going well at all in L.A. Lakers were battling for a playoff spot all year. And again, like you said, expectations were this team might win 70. This team was going to definitely be the best team in the West, competing with the Heat, one of the better teams in the league. They're battling for a playoff spot, and they are in danger of almost missing the playoff. I forgot this was the same year as well. Kobe Bryant's season ends. He suffers a torn Achilles, and he is done. The Lakers eventually qualify for the playoffs, but they do so on the final day of the season. They face San Antonio in the first round of the playoffs and were easily swept. So did not go well there on the court. It wasn't all bad, though. Howard finished the year with his lowest scoring average since his second year in the NBA, and he made just under 50% of his free throws for the second straight year as well. Regardless, though, he was the league leader in rebounding. He ranked second in field goal percentage, and he only missed 6 games all season. So despite all the ideas of him having like shoulder injuries and back injuries and whatnot, he played through a lot of the pain. Yeah, he missed a few games here and there, but yeah, he only missed 6 games all season. He was eventually named to the All-NBA third team, and that was after 5 years of consecutive first team honors. So he had jumped down to the third team this year, but still made an All-NBA team. And of course, yeah, it was one and done for Howard. He became a free agent in the summer, and he was offered a maximum contract of 5 years and $118 million from the Lakers, and then matched other teams matched that for 4 years for $88, given that they couldn't give him, you know, the Lakers could, of course, give him more than another team. In early July, Howard met with the Lakers, the Dallas Mavericks, the Houston Rockets, Golden State Warriors, and Atlanta Hawks, and on July 5th, 2013, he announced via Twitter that he was going to sign with the Rockets. I love the idea of Dwight going to, like, the Warriors. You know, this whole thing just doesn't happen. Like, the Warriors really, really wanted him, and it's, you know, they dodged a bullet there, probably. I would say, yeah, pretty large bullet there.
Yes.
Howard said of leaving Los Angeles, it was tough. I enjoyed, for the most part, living here in L.A. I just really think the timing in L.A., it just wasn't right for me. Maybe 2 years ago or 2 or 3 years from now, it would have been the right time. But I just think the timing right now was off for me. That's not saying L.A. is a bad place, but I just think it's all about timing and fit when you're talking about basketball. You can put anybody together on the court and expect them to win, but the pieces really have to fit in order for the team to be successful. And it was very, very tough, man. It's probably one of the toughest decisions I've ever had to make in my life. And some other things as well. Things did not go well in the meetings as well. People mentioned that, you know, the Lakers pitched Howard, but he was pretty much done. He was emotionless. He said he would barely look him in the eye. And then they, you know, when they found out he went to the Rockets, they were like, yeah, we pretty much assumed that. So it felt like he was pretty much done. He gave them a cursory look or whatnot. But yeah, Howard surprisingly turned down lots of money to go to Houston, turned down quite a lot of money to become a Houston Rocket and team with James Harden. And yeah, things went incredible well there, I'm sure, right? I haven't podcast, so I don't know what's going on lately, but I imagine things went quite well for the Houston
Rockets. The over part, that checks out as well. Absolutely. Yeah. Two things. The Achilles injury from Kobe, you know, that of course came when he had just ramped up his minutes incredibly when other guys were dealing with injuries and ended up basically, you know, breaking himself to the point, you know, of exhaustion and of fatigue and of, you know, injuring himself and that really was the kind of the career turning injury. He was really awesome that season and then, you know, was never the same player, unfortunately, after that. And then the announcement actually, it was leaked early. And then he, you know, like, because he was intending to, fly back to tell the Lakers in person they did it. And then it somehow got leaked. And then, you know, it was all over. So that was kind of a debacle as well. But yeah, I mean, I think by the end, no one was really super surprised that Dwight left. But I think early on, if you'd said after that trade, oh, yeah, he's going to leave the Lakers after a year, I think people would have said, you know, are you crazy? Just because of, you know, how stacked they look. Even, you know, not, it's not as though like people didn't think, okay, yeah, maybe they'll have personality issues, you know, Dwight and Kobe in particular, but you just thought the talent would just make it work. And, you know, the Lakers' success, I guess it was, you know, kind of blinding to the reality that some of that was having. But yeah, so I guess now we're going to go to Dwight Howard in Atlanta and then Dwight Howard in Charlotte. Oh, wait,
yeah, the rest of this podcast is just Dwight Howard. Yeah, we can Dwight Howard in, why am I blanking on what, I don't even remember what team he's on right now.
Wizards.
The Wizards. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. We are definitely doing an episode about that. Oh, my God. That's not going to work at all.
Yeah.
Jawan Wall. Jesus.
No. I mean, so, I think Dwight's too far past his prime to be on the anymore.
That's true.
Maybe,
right. You're right.
We're going to do something special, though. You never know. So, next we are going to go dive back into the 70s with Tiny Archibald joining the New York Nets. This was their last year in New York before they headed to New Jersey. And Archibald, he'd, you know, already been a big star for the Royals and Kings franchise since 1971, but had only made the playoffs once in 6 years. And in 1973, he led the league in points per game and assists per game with 34 and 11.4. He's usually credited as the first to do this, although Oscar Robertson actually did it as well back in, I think, 68 or 69. This was back when the credited leaders were in totals and not averages, so and people have not gone back to correct the record. But if you check out Basketball Reference, you will find that is the case. So, Archibald had just turned 28, and on September 10th, 1976, he was traded to the Nets for Jim Eakins, Brian Taylor, and two future first-round picks that ended up being Otis Birdsong and Phil Ford. The Nets had just come over from the ABA into the NBA. The merger had happened. They were coming off an ABA championship and, you know, looked like with Tiny A and Dr. J as they were being called, it looked like they could contend for another title, even with some loss of depth, and we'll kind of compare the two teams in just a little bit. Archibald later was quoted as saying, you know, I came from Kansas City to Long Island. It was great coming to New York. I thought I was going to play with Irving. I was ecstatic about the trade, and this was a homecoming for him. He bought his mother a house close to Nassau Coliseum so she could watch him play nightly. He'd grown up in New York, so, you know, homegrown guy coming back home, looking like, you know, they're going to be a marquee team. Unfortunately, things did not work out so well because on October 20th, 1976, just 50 days after the trade for Archibald, the day before the season began, the Nets traded Irving to the 76ers for $3 million in cash to pay for some merger-related expenses. And it's really weird because you would think that the Nets probably would not have acquired Archibald if they had had any idea that they couldn't afford Irving, but you would think like 2 months before that, they would have had some idea.
Yeah, it's strange. Yeah, this is a weird one. I don't know. Yeah, it was, you know, when what would have happened that would have made it like, okay, now we actually have to trade this. Now we absolutely need this money. Not like, you know, a month ago. Like you kind of knew the expenses were terrible, right? Like you knew that you probably were going to have an issue. Why did it have to be right now at this point to do it? So
they had to pay the $3 million or expansion fee, and then they also had to pay the an extra $3 million for being in the Knicks territory, and I'm not sure if that was totally apparent when the merger happened or if that became apparent.
Okay. That they came in and the Knicks were like, what are you doing? Like, we'll make them pay $3 million. And then the Nets were like, oh, yeah, no, we don't really have that money. So,
I don't know. There's some odd disconnect there. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It wasn't the last, of course, for NBA teams. We kind of now think of it like they're just, you know, flushed with cash and just unbelievable. But at these times, you know, little things like this are, you know, especially in the 70s, NBA was a little tricky, especially former ABA teams, too. Not exactly the most financially stable league in the history of
I just think to not have such a, you know, unclear idea of your finances seems a little weird. But,
gotten better about that. So.
No.
Though now they're owned by, you know, very different people than they were then, it's kind that's of tradition true. For the Nets to just not kind of have any awareness of anything going on around them. So,
yeah. So the Nets, you know, if you look at the 76 team versus the 77 team, I mean, there were seven players who played on both teams. You know, from the 76 championship team, you know, they lost Julius Irving, Brian Taylor, and Jim Eakins. They still had, they sold Rich Jones. They had, They had Tim Bassett, Al Skinner, Kim Hughes. Not a murderer's row here. And one thing, in addition to Archibald's injury, they also had John Williamson only played half the season with the team. So they had a lot of guys out. So theoretically, I think they could have had, if Archibald had been healthy and if they'd have had Irving, I think they would have definitely been a deep playoff contender, maybe championship contender. But they had lost some of their depth. They'd added Jan Vrabel, who was pretty good young player. But they weren't exactly they still would have been a little bit tough. But I think they definitely would have been there. But Archibald had a foot injury after 34 games in the season that kept him out for the rest of the season. But when he was there, his performance actually was pretty good. 20.5 points per game, 7.5 assists per game, 52 true shooting, 2.2 box score plus minus. All were right around his numbers from the previous season. Unfortunately, things did not get better for Tiny. The following season, he was traded to the Buffalo Braves in September of 77. And then just about... 6 weeks later, he suffered a Achilles tendon tear in a preseason game against the Pistons and missed the entire season. So he never played a regular season game in a Braves uniform. He did play six preseason games. And thanks to Todd Spear, we can reconstruct the entire Tiny Archibald era in Buffalo. Only one of those was an actual NBA city, which was Buffalo, his final game there against the Pistons. He also played in Grand Rapids, Michigan, South Bend, Indiana, Syracuse, New York, Portland, Maine, and Louisville, Kentucky. So fun Tiny Archibald facts.
Yeah, those are great stuff.
Yes. And then later on, he ended up becoming part of the Clippers and Celtics franchise swap, which after struggling a bit early with some conditioning issues and then clashing with Celtics coach Bill Fitch, ended up carving a big role in the 81 championship team and for five seasons with the Celtics. In fact, he ended up making more all-star teams with the Celtics than he did with the Kings, which I found kind of fascinating.
Yeah, no, that is, yeah, I knew he was obviously had played a big role in Boston, but I had never really thought that he'd made three all-star games there. That's pretty cool. I mean, obviously, there's the 81 year where he was a huge part of it. But yeah, I'm shocked that he made three all-star teams with Boston. It just caught me by surprise. Well, five overall, his entire career.
Right. I mean, also kind of just shocked he only made two with the Royals.
I think that's the more shocking part. Yeah. Maybe not that he made them with Boston, but that he didn't make more prior to that. So that's pretty nuts there.
He was hurt 1 year, and I think the first year he didn't play a super amount, but still, I'm surprised by that one.
And the people that don't know, because you had mentioned it, and I think a lot of people listening probably do know this, but in case you don't, when you say the Clippers-Celtics franchise swap, what are you referring to there? I think, we know about that. We've talked about it before, but maybe if you're just jumping in there, you might not be like, wait, the Clippers and the Celtics swap franchises? Like, sort of, kind of.
Yeah, right. Basically, yes. So, the short answer to that question is the Celtics owner by that point was Irv Levin. He wanted to move the franchise to San Diego, and the NBA did not want to move obviously the Celtics franchise, it's a premier cornerstone franchise, to out of Boston. So the
Braves sometimes government is good. See, sometimes government oversight is good. Like if you just the Boston Celtics would be playing in San Diego right now, that would be bad. Sure. We don't want
San Diego
that.
Celtics. Yeah,
I like San Diego. So, I don't want the Boston Celtics in San Diego though.
Sure. Yeah. So So the Buffalo team was struggling. Their ownership was bad. They'd sold off a lot of stars, so they worked out a deal where they were able to essentially swap the owners of the franchises, swapped ownership of the franchise. I think even legally, the Celtics, the ownership or whatever, the franchise be named behind the team name or whatever, was actually was officially traded. So I think if you want to get absolutely technical in the same way that we like to get to about New Orleans and Charlotte history, I think very technically the Celtics franchise would continue along with the Clippers, and the and the Braves franchise would continue along with the Celtics, but obviously they swapped the franchise history and all that good stuff. But yes, in the midst of all that, they also swapped about half the players on the teams as well, and swapped some draft picks that were involved as well. In fact, the Clippers were very close to getting the pick that ended up being Larry Bird, but cooler heads prevailed there, and they were able to avoid that for the Celtics.
Yeah, so definitely a weird year. Yeah, you can do some other research and read about it and stuff like that.
I think we've never done a show specifically on it, but we've done some shows on bad owners and on wacky wacky stuff in the 70s. So dive back into our archives, you'll find some more in-depth discussion about it.
Yes, we've definitely had an episode almost exclusively about John Y. Brown or whatever, and have Maverick owners and all that sort of stuff.
Yes,
yeah, definitely.
Exactly.
Definitely want to check that out if you get a chance. That'd be fun to kind of explore maybe for an episode of itself one of these days. But all right, move on to our next guy here. This is Chris Webber on the Golden State Warriors, and this is a pretty famous one as well. Webber was selected by the Orlando Magic with the first pick of the 1993 NBA draft, becoming the first sophomore since Magic Johnson to be the number one overall pick, but did not last long in Orlando because he was immediately traded to Golden State Warriors in exchange for Penny Hardaway and three future first-round draft picks. And now this trade always kind of... It, at the time, if you read stuff, people were angered about this because Orlando was in some cap issues. They were looking to kind of get, you know, a paid guy in a Penny Hardaway. They were looking to kind of get some future draft picks or whatnot. It seems weird that like a franchise that was as young as Orlando would be in this situation, but they kind of were. They tried to get good right away. And like, you know, especially once they drafted Shaq, it was like, okay, let's get this thing rolling as quickly as we can. So it ended up being a trade that, you know, in retrospect worked out pretty well. I mean, obviously Chris Webber and Shaquille would have been a fun little tandem, but Penny and Shaq were a fun little tandem, and obviously they made a finals trip, and you know, a lot of good success came of this trade and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see that it ended up working out for those. But yeah, it was at one point kind of just a salary dump to get a guy, you know, who's going to get paid less.
Well, Rich, I mean, Betsy DeVos needed another yacht, so
of
obviously,
course, all right,
yeah. So obviously the Magic had to make that deal. I mean,
that
obviously
is,
makes
that
sense.
Is our director of education. I forget what her name is exactly, but she's bad at whatever her job is. All right, let's move on here. So Don Nelson, he's kind of happy though because he just got Chris Webber. He says, this is the year we've got to make a statement with our big people, and we did it without losing any of our nucleus. We've been trying to get some size for a long, long time. Now we have a fellow who can play power forward and some center for us. I feel this team is ready to challenge anybody next year. That's Warriors coach Don Nelson. Don, you're in. Howard, as we mentioned before, the Dwight Howard trade, Chris Webber did not seem all that invested in the deal either. He had spent pretty much the last 2 months talking about playing with O'Neal, understanding that he's definitely going to be the number one overall pick and he's going to go to Orlando and everything that's going to happen. That didn't happen. Of course, the quote was, maybe I wasn't the right thing for them. This is still a great thrill to be the number one player in the draft. This is a dream come true. Don't take away my dream come true. So I don't know what he like within that. He was like, oh, wait, no, I'm happy. You're not happy. Why are you not happy? I'm happy. You're good. But he probably wasn't that happy. Anyway, he'd have a great year in Golden State, though. He had 17.5 points per game, 9.1 rebounds per game. He won the Rookie of the Year award and led the Warriors to the playoffs. They were eventually swept by the Suns in the first round. But yeah, getting the Warriors back to the playoffs, everything kind of worked out. I mean, on the court, it seemed like it was great. Webber was doing well. Nelly Ball was playing like crazy, and things were great. They made the playoffs, and yeah, everything's going to go great for the Warriors, the next generation of the Warriors. And yeah, there were some issues, and there were a lot of issues. Nelson wanted to make Webber a post player, despite Webber's superb passing ability and good ball handling skills for someone of his time. Webber, he really disliked playing a lot of time at center in the quote, you know, Nelly Ball system. Nelson and the Warriors attempted to acquiesce Webber's demands. They acquired center Ronnie Cicely in the offseason so that Webber could move to power forward. But right after they did that, Webber exercised a 1-year escape clause that he had in his contract, saying that he had no intention to return to the Warriors. Golden State eventually re-signed him and then did a trade, a sign-in trade immediately, sending Webber to the Washington Bullets for forwards Tom Gugliotta and three first-round picks. So they got their first-round picks back that they traded away, but they also replaced Webber with Tom Gugliotta, and that was not as good of a trade. But the quotes afterwards, man, these are something. I got these from the incredible, we've talked about this many times, but the incredible NBA trades Tumblr, where if you don't follow that, like, that he goes into insane detail about like every trade, like, and when I say every trade, I mean every trade. Like, Robert Pack gets traded for somebody and you hear like 100 quotes about Robert Pack getting traded in, you know, like 1997 or whatever. Really great stuff there, so definitely check it out, NBA trades on Tumblr. This is from Chris Webber. He says, listen, I've had coaches that were absolute jerks. I mean, they screamed at us all the time, but you still have to respect people. You don't yell at them. Why did we draft you in front of little kids in the stands? That's all Chris Webber had to say after it. Don Nelson was a little, a little nicer, but also kind of throwing some digs at Webber as well. He said, this is not a happy day for us. This is not the way we anticipated the Chris Webber situation. We were building a championship team and Chris Webber was a part of that. But circumstances did not turn out that way. I don't know what I've done in the past that made Chris so angry at me that he would want to not play for me. I thought I was soft on Chris. I tried to love him. There were some major problems that I didn't know about. Webber said he wants to leave because of me. He says there's a problem between us. I wasn't tough at Chris at all. There were a few times, a few disagreements, but I've been tougher on other players. So, you know, Nelly can't, like, he's trying to be nice, like, oh, I don't know, but also being like, hey, I wasn't really that bad. I mean, shit, if Webber thinks that's bad, he should see these other guys. So it was, it just did not work out. The Webber-Nelson thing did not work out, which kind of stunk, because it looked like it was working on the court, and it was fun to see the Warriors kind of working their way towards relevance again, but did not work out. And Webber, of course, would go to Washington. That would have a few years of okay, and then he would move on to Sacramento. And that's where, of course, the big success of Chris Webber's career came. But at this point, definitely not a good start to Chris Webber's career. On the court, good. Production-wise, good. But yeah, of course, getting traded or you know, leaving your original team 1 year in, definitely unique in this sense because he had the escape clause, but definitely in some ways a red flag for both Don Nelson and for Chris Webber at this point. But yeah, but did not last very long in Golden State, though.
Yeah, no, this was better on the court than I remember. I mean, they were a 50-win team.
Yeah.
You know, first-round exit, obviously not good, but this wasn't like a team with an immense amount of talent. I mean, they had Chris Mullin, but he was 30. You know, they had Latrell Sprewell, who was, you know, obviously young and had potential and, you know, was pretty good. But, you know, their other good players were Billy Owens and Avery Johnson and Victor Alexander. You know, there wasn't like a... You know, it wasn't like a super team. You know, it was like a fairly good team. And yeah, I think they were the fact that it went that well with Webber, you know, playing a role that he didn't really like or felt like fit him that well. And I'm not really sure and necessarily. I mean, obviously, like Nelly Ball kind of became the way of the future. I'm not necessarily sure it was the best for Webber at that point. But, you know, his stretchability was that strong, although obviously his passing and, you know, so many other things that he did were really awesome. And yeah, obviously the idea of, you know, small ball centers at the time, not in vogue like it is today. But yeah, that's an interesting situation. It seems like there's just a real... It's more just a personality disconnect, and neither guy necessarily, you know, unless there's obviously maybe just things they're not telling us. It seems more just like a, you know, these guys just couldn't get on the same page or whatever, as opposed to like any like, you know, real genuine, you know, like, yeah, it's more puzzling than like a personality clash between, you know, Dwight and Kobe. Like that one seems like obvious in retrospect. This one seems just like a little bit more because like there aren't like a whole lot of like 100 other incidents of these guys getting into like personality issues with, you know, other guys. It just seems unique to these two guys in the situation.
Yeah. And just unique again that like Webber had that opt-out clause and stuff. And there was a little bit,
right.
Rookies had a little bit more power at that point. So, you know, of course,
oh, yeah.
You know, 1999 did quite the number on rookie contracts. But yeah, there was a time where like rookies, and that's a big reason why Webber eventually got traded from Orlando to Golden State, because they thought he was going to just command too much and have a little bit more. And guys had that power. So if Webber, you know, he just said, yeah. Hey, I'm not happy here. I'm going to move on. So it like, but it seems weird though, because sure. Never before or after has we ever seen like a guy be able to have that much power in a way as a rookie. And that the idea wasn't just, hey, we're going to make this work, or hey, we're going to try to make this work out. It was just like Webber was like, no, I'm out and I'm done. And yeah, so it was definitely interesting. I think Tim Hardaway missed that entire year as well. It's interesting to wonder what they would have done if Hardaway would have played the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
They were a really good team. And
that's right.
Things were getting together. And unfortunately, this was their last playoff appearance until 2007. So
yikes.
Yeah.
Not ideal. So next we have Paul Westfall in Seattle. He was traded by Phoenix to Seattle for Dennis Johnson in June of 1980. Actually, here there's some kind of interesting parallels to the Kawhi Leonard DeMar DeRozan trade. Dennis Johnson, who was the 79 Finals MVP, had feuded with his coach, Lenny Wilkins, who later called him a cancer. Westfall at this point was 29. He'd been an All-NBA 4 years in a row, including three times on the first team. So was, you know, an elite player during the time, obviously getting a bit older, getting close to 30. Dennis Johnson was 25, probably the best defensive guard in the league at that point, and had been All-NBA second team in 1980. So he was, you know, I guess entering his prime at this point. But, you know, and both these franchises had been, you know, perennial 50 win teams, and, you know, were kind of, you know, Western Conference, you know, right under the Lakers in terms of, you know, being title contenders. I mean, they were both right there in you know, potential of them, you know, being able to battle the Lakers, you know, theoretically in a playoff series, although it never really came to fruition for the team. Despite having regular season success, they never really, you know, neither one really seriously challenged the Lakers in any way. Although Phoenix continued to be successful with Johnson after this, you know, more 50 win seasons. Seattle, not so lucky, unfortunately.
No, yeah, they finished 34-48 that year. It was a year after Western Conference Finals appearance and 2 years after title, so that is not great at all. Gus Johnson held out for the season. Lonnie Shelton only played 14 games, and Westfall himself, he only played 36 games as well. So he averaged 16.7 points per game. That was down from 21.9 the year prior. He had a 51.7 true shooting percentage. That was down from 59.3. And then a negative 1.2 box plus minus, down from plus 2.4. So pretty much got worse across the board and played in less games, which is not a good recipe for success.
No, not so good. Yeah, and there's a article from January of 1981 talking about Westfall, things not going well in Seattle. His quote is, "It hasn't been fun. Although it's been a frustrating several months, I'm not sorry I asked to be traded. Bad luck can happen anywhere." So he had actually asked to be traded from Phoenix as well. I'm not sure the circumstances behind that, because things had actually gone pretty well there, at least in terms of team success. Not clear on why he wanted to be traded on that. I couldn't really find anything more on that. He said that most of his frustrations at the time, he had a stress fracture of his right leg. He was out for 25 games between October 26th, December 22nd, and then he returned to face his former teammates. The Sonics, as you talked about earlier, you're dealing with Gus Williams being out, Lonnie Shelton not playing much, you know, two of probably their top five players who were out for either the entire season or most of the season. They were only 6-7 since he'd come back, and again, he would only play 36 games in the season. However, the Sonics public relations staff was able to help get him the most votes of any Western Conference guard. So he started alongside George Gervin for the All-Star game, his fifth All-Star appearance, I believe his final one. Because things did not end well in Seattle, and really, you know, he was not a particularly effective player for the rest of his career. There's a article from 1981, and he said that that the Sonics offered him a contract that was totally unrealistic, only $200,000 per year. His quote is, "I'm taking this as a message that I'm no longer wanted in Seattle. I think the offer was kind of insulting." So, unfortunately, he did not enjoy that. So there were some questions about whether he would be able to sign with another team, but he eventually did sign with the Knicks, where unfortunately the struggles and the health continued to not be great for him. Then ended up going back to Phoenix and retiring in Phoenix.
Yes, so that's kind of an unfortunate thing there. But yeah, I mean, all things considered, you were hoping that was going to work out a little bit better for every end there, especially, you know, Westfall in Seattle felt like that would be a good fit, but it just didn't. Yeah, it just did not work out, and his body kind of betrayed him at that point. And you know, a guy who was once a really great player ended up just being kind of a guy, and it did kind of stink. So he's a guy again where, like, yeah, if you look back at it, you're like, well, Paul Westfall wasn't good, like, da, 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 yeah, but yeah, the expectations were very high coming in there, especially with that Seattle team that was one of the best in the league at that point. You know, it just been off, as we said earlier, finals 2 years ago, and then Western Conference Finals the year prior. So yeah, the expectations were very high, and obviously those expectations were not even remotely close to met. And it's particularly with Westfall and the rest of his career, definitely not met whatsoever.
Yeah, right. In retrospect, yeah, the age was, you know, he was just at the age, but he'd been super healthy going into that
right,
year.
Right.
He played 81 or 82 games last four seasons. You know, he'd had a lot of success there. It wasn't like it was inevitable that, you know, things were going to go badly. He kind of had a comeback year in 83 with the Knicks. He played basically a full season. His numbers were not great, but they were all right. You know, they bounced back a little bit. You know, had some success, you know, playing with Bernard King and all that, you know, before his final year in Phoenix, where they did make the conference finals, but he was, you know, more of a bit role at that point, only averaging about 15 points a game. Or 15 minutes per game, excuse me.
Yeah, and I do love the idea, too, that the Seattle PR staff gets him, like, the most votes. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's a lot easier now with, like, you know, you can vote online or whatever. That's difficult back in the day, man. Those are paper ballots. That's, you know, writing stuff in. Like, you got to really get big on, like, the Paul Westfall starting the All-Star game bandwagon, which is, you know, like...
Well, yeah, there you go. Well, you know, you got the Kingdom, so you're getting more people in the venue.
Oh,
so
that's maybe true, that right. Yeah, there was just more pamphlets. Yeah,
yeah, I guess. I don't know. Right.
That's true. I forgot they were a Kingdom team at that point. So that's hardly fair.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty good there. All right, and then what I believe, yeah, final one. We have a few little other examples here, little quick examples, but our final big one is Scottie Pippen in Houston. You know about this one, of course, after winning his second three-peat with the Bulls. They went into rebuild mode. Jordan retired, Jackson retired, Rodman was, well, Dennis Rodman. He moved on to do whatever the hell Dennis Rodman did afterwards, the Lakers and the Mavericks and all that sort of stuff. But Pippen, he still felt he had some stuff left in the tank, and he was looking for greener pastures. In January 1999, this is the lockout, of course, so we're jumping the season up a little bit here. Since January 1999 and no one has played yet, the league officially announced the deal. Scottie Pippen will be traded from the Chicago Bulls to the Houston Rockets immediately after the lockout ends. This was a sign and trade here. Pippen had talked to the Rockets about signing with them as a free agent. It was not immediately clear why he agreed to a sign and trade. This was at the time a report, but other teams were known to be discussing other sign and trade deals with Bulls general manager Jerry Krause. I've kind of theorized, and I don't know if it's ever been like straight up there, but it was the idea that, because like we've talked about it many, many times before, that Pippen was, you know, habitually underpaid every single year by the Bulls. So maybe the final little sign and trade on his way out was like a way to say like, all right, let's make sure you get the most money as long as we're not paying you. So like, you know, we'll sign you to a big, big time deal, but then, you know, then you go leave and somebody else has to pay you. I don't know if that's exactly why it seemed, because there was no reason for him to do a sign and trade. There was no reason for the Bulls to do that either. So it must have been something. I mean, the Bulls could obviously offer max money, so it's just probably the easiest way for both the sides to do that. After the deal, Rocket spokesman Tim Frank says, we're not going to confirm anything. The lockout is technically not over. We're still under lockout restrictions. No deal can officially be done until that cloak is lifted. So Tim Frank definitely saying, no, we are not tampering with lockout rules. We definitely did not agree to a deal during the lockout. What are you talking about? What are you saying? No, I don't even know who Scottie Pippen is. Who is Scottie Pippen? Who are the Bulls? I don't know.
I like, no deal can officially be done until that cloak is lifted. Yeah, right. Sounds very mysterious.
Right, so, exactly. You know. A cloak of darkness of the lockout. Cloak.
Yes.
But believe it or not, shockingly, the deal was immediately, once the cloak was lifted, the deal was agreed on. So it, like, they just called each other the minute after, like, hey, Scottie Pippen, you interested in Scottie Pippen? Like, am I? That's great. So it worked out pretty well here. So Pippen is in the fold. Houston re-signed Charles Barkley, and that gave them a formidable team. They were led by Charles Barkley, Hakeem Olajuwon, and Scottie Pippen. At this point, again, like, you're looking at those guys and going, okay, well, Barkley's a little old, he's been having some issues. Pippen obviously had his back issues the last year in Chicago. Hakeem Olajuwon is up there in age, but still, there was a lot of expectation with this team. They were praised very well. Pippen, after the trade, received a lot of publicity. He had a solo cover of Sports Illustrated. The headline, though, not that generous. The headline is less about, you know, Scottie Pippen's emergence in Houston. He had a solo cover, but the headline was, should we still love this game? So it was basically reacting to the lockout. So lockout happened, we're annoyed. Do we still love this game? But Scottie Pippen, on his own, in a Houston Rockets uniform, is on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So that's a big deal. I mean, expectations are, again, high and similar to the LA thing. Doesn't always work out all that well. The subhead on this article as well says, the renovated Rockets. So again, like I said, expectations were high. Like, the idea was, yeah, Barkley and Hakeem were up there in age, but man, they got Scottie Pippen now in the fold, and there's some other good role players. Like, Houston's going to be a formidable bunch, and the West was pretty open at this point as well. The whole NBA was open at this point, particularly with, you know, the Bulls, you know, going down, and the East is up for the taking, and the West, of course, had been up for the taking for quite a while. So yeah, it seemed like a very good fit for everybody.
Yeah, and they were definitely, you know, they were a solid enough team, but it was just it was a little bit like the Dwight Howard Lakers, where it was just chemistry issues, attitude issues, a little bit on the injury woes. Pippen had an infamous run-in with the law. He was detained under suspicion of DUI. And on the court, you know, things were only kind of so-so. He had a career high in minutes per game, 40.2, which seems that, you know, Pippen was getting up there in age, and maybe not the best idea. 14.5 points per game, which is the lowest since his rookie year. Only made 43.2% of his shots. So, you know, a little bit of a struggle of adjustment there. You know, also, you know, obviously it's a season where you're going into, you know, you're starting in January rather than your normal routine. So I'm sure that had an effect as well. He was named to the all-defensive first team for the eighth time. However, the Rockets, you know, they finished season 31-19. Certainly, you know, not a bad record. They were able to, however, they faced the Lakers in the first round, and they lost to the Lakers 3-1. Of course, you know, that was, Shaq was on that team, Kobe was on that team, but that was post Eddie Jones and Van Exel were gone, correct, from that team?
I think so. Yeah, let me double check on that team, because that's this weird era of Los Angeles. It wasn't quite right. The, you know, obviously the Phil Jackson years, yet. But right. Like, yeah, right. A little bit of holdovers, but it felt like they were kind of assembling that entire crew. Yeah, I don't remember if Jones was still there. I went to the wrong year. God damn it. Got me in the lockup. There they are. That's old Del Harris. Call Kurt Rambis coached this team. So yeah. I forgot he played a little bit. Yeah, so this was, okay, so this was the Glenn Rice. So Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, Glenn Rice, Eddie Jones, Rick Fox, Eldon Campbell. Team. So okay. Campbell's
so
on his way out.
Gone, but not yet Eddie Jones.
Yeah, Eddie Jones is on his way out. Glenn Rice would, of course, hang around for another year or so. But yeah, so you get most of the team, but yeah, you get some little holdovers here and there as well. But yeah, for the base of it, you know, Derek Fisher's in the fold, Tyronn Lue's in the fold, Robert Horry's in the fold. Like, a lot of the big guys are there. They're just, you know, not quite. Reuben Patterson, the Kobe stopper, was learning all he could about how to stop Kobe Bryant at this point as well.
Sure. So. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. That's, yeah, so right, I mean, and right after that, it was basically when the tension came to the surface. Everyone is, you know, Pippen wants to be traded, nobody's happy in Houston.
Yeah, this is bad, and like, it's kind of interesting, because yeah, they finished 31-19. Like you said, that's not a bad record. Like, if Pippen had hung around for another year, like, we probably don't look at this year, and like, they're maybe okay the next year or whatever, but the idea that we're looking at this, and the blunder, and oh my god, it's such a disaster, pretty much all falls on the fact that Pippen just immediately wanted to leave, and the chemistry issues that we were talking about. So we said, yeah, immediately after the elimination, Pippen wants to be traded. In the media, he's saying, get me out of here, I cannot wait to get out of here. And the quotes, they start flooding in, man, so get ready for this. Back and forth between these two. Charles Barkley says, for him to want to leave after 1 year, it disappointed me greatly. The Rockets went out of their way to get Scottie, and the fans have treated him well, so I was just disappointed in him. Pippen, not so cordially, says, I wouldn't give Charles Barkley an apology at gunpoint. He can never expect an apology from me. If anything, he owes me an apology for coming to play with his fat butt. So that was not good. Pippen then doubled down by saying, I probably should have listened to Michael a year ago when he said that Charles will never win a championship because he doesn't show any dedication. He's a very selfish guy. He doesn't show the desire to want to win. That's my reason for wanting to get away from playing with him, because he just doesn't show the dedication. And then Pippen decided to go in one more, and he says, I wouldn't exactly say I wanted to be traded. No, I wanted to see that we were a team that I was trying to win a championship. That was my main reason for going there. And I felt like that at some point we just gave up on ourselves. We didn't want to win. So you're fat, you don't want to win, and you don't show any dedication. So I'm going to go. Bye. Yeah. So that's not great. So yeah. Charles Barkley at one point like shows decorum in this. Like, I'm kind of surprised of Charles. He didn't quite go out of his way there. He said he was disappointed. And then Pippen just went in for the you know, the jugular.
Yeah. At least Pippen was smart enough not to go after a game, because that wasn't
good. No, that would have been bad. Yeah. So he just went right at Sir Charles.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So didn't go after Michael Dickerson either. You know, Michael Dickerson.
Oh, you don't sling Michael Dickerson and then live to tell the tale. So that's
no, you do not. Absolutely not. You do not mess with Michael Dickerson. Absolutely. Never. Never do that. My good friend Michael Dickerson, you don't do that.
No. Pippen was traded, of course, by the Houston Rockets to the Portland Trail Blazers, because you probably want to trade the guy that, you know, said all those things and wants to be traded. So he got traded to the Portland Trail Blazers in exchange for Stacey Augmon, Kelvin Cato, Ed Gray, Carlos Rogers, Brian Shaw, and Walt Williams. So, I mean, those are players that played in the NBA, so that's kind
of
cool.
Yeah. Like, some of them were good, you know.
Yeah, like 6 years ago, that Stacey Augmon deal would have been pretty nice, but unfortunately.
Yeah. I can't imagine there are a lot of 6-for-1 NBA trades. Like, you know, like I wonder what's the most amount of players have been traded for one player. If 6 is the record, or if there's 7, we'll have to put that in for a future show idea. Because I'm not curious. The largest imbalance between, you know, it has to just be players, not like draft picks and players.
Because, right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if how much salary matching was a consideration here. I'm sure it had to be to a certain extent, but yeah.
What I love about that, so Portland gives up 6 players, as we said, but their team is still, like, ungodly deep. Like, this next year, they have Rasheed, they have Steve Smith, they have Scottie Pippen, they have Damon Stoudemire, they have Sabonis, they have Bonzi Wells, they have Detlef Schrempf, they have Brian Grant, they have Greg Anthony. You know, like, they were still, like, ridiculously deep. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, the Rockets, they were not much better than they were actually significantly worse the next year. 34 and 40. Yeah, I'm just trying to see who of those players actually continued to be on the
So Stacey Augmon went right back to the Trailblazers, so that didn't work out for him. Okay. So the one guy that we said was great, he got waived 10 days later by the Rockets, and guess who resigned him? The Portland Trailblazers.
Kelvin Cato ended up had some good years with the Rockets. Carlos Rogers stuck around. I don't see Ed Gray. Brian Shaw went to the there's Devin Gray here, but not Ed Gray. Brian Shaw ended up going to Lakers, I'm sure, and then Walt Williams. Walt Williams ended up here. So they kept like half the players.
So they got Walt Williams and Kelvin Cato. So that's
Maybe not the best trade ever. Yeah. Maybe not ideal.
Why would you keep Stacy? Why would you just release Stacy Ogman? What are you doing? Maybe you probably just make the money work. They didn't need him.
Probably not. Yeah. You know. You want to, you know, have that playing time for Kenny Thomas. You know. Yes. So, yeah, some other examples that are kind of often brought up in this that, you know, we wanted to, like, touch on. A few of them we brought up a little bit, but we'll just dig into them real quick. Karl Malone and Gary Payton in L.A. 2004. This was brought up a lot, but, you know, those two guys obviously were, you know, close to the end of their careers, although Malone was still, you know, a pretty awesome player even at age 40. And Payton was still really good, too. But and also the team, like, they made the finals, and, you know, they weren't that far from winning a championship. I feel like that was kind of a debacle, but in terms of, like, the, you know, they basically met the expectations that, you know, or came close to meeting the expectations that they would have had. It wasn't like they didn't really feel on the court. It was just all the circus and everything around the court. That was the issue there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And had they not, you know, blown the finals to a team that everybody kind of assumed was like, oh, the scrappy Pistons team or whatever, which we always, we talk about this as well. Like, that was a really great team with, like, really great players. So the idea that it was like, oh, this ragtag bunch of guys who were no good, they're like these okay players. Like, there wasn't any stars. Like, no, Rasheed Wallace is a star. Like, Chauncey Billups is a star. Like, there were stars on that team, but that sort of fueled the narrative a little bit too. It didn't help that Kobe and Shaq wanted to kill each other and Phil was kind of over everything as well. So yeah, there was a lot of circumstances that led to that. Not necessarily a blame on Carl and Peyton, even though there may have been some chemistry issues with those guys, but still, like, I think there was so much else going around that it was almost untenable from day one.
Yeah, I know there was some fit issues with Peyton and not really fitting into the triangle and some issues there. But yeah, but basically on the court, you know, they achieved what was reasonable to expect of a team, you know, coming, you know, two games short of winning a championship or whatever. It's, you know, fairly good. The others, you know, we talked about it a little bit. Dwayne Wade in Chicago, I think that's just a little bit too far removed from his prime to really have expectations of things, you know, going well there. They certainly, you know, maybe a playoff contender, but certainly not a championship one. Iverson in Detroit, again, I think that was one where that was an interesting wrinkle because of Iverson, you know, going to this team that had, you know, made six straight conference finals or what have you, and, you know, we're looking for a shakeup there. So that I think that went worse than expected, but I don't think expectations should have been, you know, particularly high in that case. And then Isaiah Thomas in Cleveland, as you talked about, you know, going in, I mean, I think that people knew about the injury. I think there was more expectations that he would be able to play earlier and that he would be able to, you know, contribute. But he was also a guy where, you know, he really had, like, one awesome season before them, but it wasn't like he had a huge resume of being, like, a star for a long time. It was more like he'd, you know, become a really good player, but it wasn't like he was – I don't consider it comparable to these other situations because, you know, he just hadn't really had quite the same track record as the other guys.
Yeah, no, and that one doesn't quite work for me a little bit because and there was obviously some injury potential concerns with the Cleveland thing as well. And yeah, there was a lot. So I don't know. I don't know if it's quite fair to put that. And that, again, might be sort of a catch-22, but I don't know that anybody was like, oh, Isaiah Thomas is on Cleveland. This is going to change the game now. They're ready to go. Like, they're ramped up. Like, I think there was definitely healthy skepticism immediately upon Isaiah going to Cleveland. So I don't think it was, that everybody was like, oh, this is what's going to turn the tables for them. So yeah, that's a little tough. Where the other guys we talked about all had pretty high expectations coming in.
Right. And I think Isaiah, the other thing is that, like, they were having to trade Kyrie, you know, clearly a better player. And it was like, well, okay, if you're going to get that, you know, if you're going to have to get that return for it, this is a fairly good return. And it ended up being, you know, not a good return. But at the time, it looked like a better return than it ended up being, I guess. So I guess the expectation there is that, like, it looked like a reasonably even trade. And then it was basically a failure trade in all, in every aspect, other than getting a decent draft pick.
Right, exactly. It felt great for like 10 minutes. And then when people kind of dug in, they were like, I don't know. And then, yeah, pretty much weeks in, it was like, oh no, this is not good at all.
Oh no, this is not good. Yeah. So yeah, I these are the ones that have been down. I don't know if there's any others that, that came to you at the top of your head. You talked about a few at the top of the show. I think we may have addressed pretty much all the major ones.
I think so. Yeah, there was some other, you know, people had mentioned a few ones here and there in our, you know, Facebook group and on Twitter. I said George Gervin was one in Chicago where people mentioned. People, of course, a lot of people brought up this current Jimmy Butler one, not knowing that, you know, that's the reason why we did this episode. It's kind of the Jimmy thing when that eventually goes. But I think, I think we got just about every other one. I'm curious if there are anybody who if you do have other ones, of course, Over and Back on Facebook and then at Over and Back NBA on Twitter. Let us know If there was ones that we missed, ones that you really like, ones that you think that we, the one name. But again, try to keep it guys in prime. I think that makes it a little bit more fun when you try to think of guys that were really good. But yeah, most guys stick it out at least one more year. It was tough to find it. You know what I mean? Like we came up with some ones, and a lot of them are recent examples. But yeah, guys usually hang around for at least one, you know, one or try for another year and a half or whatever, get traded the next deadline. So it's really hard to find just one and done guys that are in their prime. But I think we did a pretty good job of finding some. So.
Yeah, this was fun. Fun subject to explore. Some things I learned that I didn't know about or hadn't remembered it about in a long time. So always fun to do that. Hopefully listeners enjoyed it, and they can find us. Of course, you mentioned our Twitter and Facebook pages. You can also find us at The Step Back at fansided.com. And we have lots of other great stuff going on with the season ramping up. There's going to be season preview content. There's other good articles and podcasts going on there. So you should definitely check all that out. And you can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you listen to your podcast. We are there. We appreciate the ratings and reviews. It makes us feel better about ourselves, and that's obviously very important. So thanks everyone for checking us out, and we're back again soon.